Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is loving yourself. And the numbers to call to reach me live on air are 866-254-1579 in the United States or Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S., you can dial 001-760-918-4300. And we'll chat. But before we do, let me set the table. Let me talk a little about this whole loving yourself thing. Now, those of you who listen to podcasts, and you can listen to the podcast Caffeine for the Soul, we were the number 5 self-help podcast in the United Kingdom this week on iTunes. And we got into the I think it was the top 30 in the United States. And so it's still a very new podcast. We're about 30, 35 episodes in. They're all very short. They're 5 to 10 minutes. And this week on the podcast, on Caffeine for the Soul, we had Anita Morjani. I had a conversation with her, which we kind of shared in 5 espresso-sized chunks. And one of them was about loving yourself, because at the heart of Anita's work, and those of you who don't know Anita, she's a wonderful Hay House author, but before she was a Hay House author, she was a wonderful human being who had a near-death experience. And in that near-death experience, where she died, basically, and she saw life from the other side and came back with some not only incredible insights about life, but without the stage 4 cancer that she had gone into the near-death experience with. And she's just a love. She's just a really lovely lady, and we had a beautiful conversation. And one of the things she talks about a lot is loving yourself. And one of the things I mentioned in our conversation was that when I hear the phrase loving yourself, and maybe it's I lived in England for too long, or maybe I'm just a repressed American, but I just kind of cringe. I go, loving yourself. And yet, I'm very aware that it's a lack of love, it's a withholding of love from ourselves that creates a host of problems in our lives and a host of problems in our relationship. Because if we are not in touch with the love in ourselves, we will go anywhere to get it. One of my favorite metaphors for it comes from the work of Don Miguel Ruiz in his book, The Mastery of Love. He shares an analogy of the pizza man. And he says, imagine that there's a pizza man who I don't know if he's a man, but I'm making him a man, a pizza delivery guy. And he comes to that to your apartment or your flat or your house and says, hey, I got pizza. And you go, oh, that's okay. I didn't order pizza. And he goes, no, I know you didn't order it, but it's really good pizza. And it's almost free. And he's like, well, okay, what do you mean by almost free? And he said, well, you have to let me kind of come in and be abusive towards you. You know, emotionally or mentally or physically, we can figure it out. You know, and you're like, go away. That's horrible. And then you get really hungry and you smell the pizza and you just think, okay, all right, how much abuse for one slice? And you know, you make a deal, you get your slice, it's great, it's glorious. You take your abuse, you say, never again, and you send the delivery guy away. And then the next day, the same thing, and the next day, the same thing. And at some point, you kind of let the delivery guy move in because it's just easier that way. And you have a very dysfunctional relationship. Now, this can go both ways. This is not about men or women. This is about where we look for love when we can't find it in ourselves. And in the book, Don Miguel Ruiz uses the analogy of a magical kitchen. We do that only because we don't realize we've got a kitchen and it's fully stocked. And we can make pizza anytime we want. And in fact, if I was going to extend that analogy out to a point where it becomes totally dysfunctional and doesn't work as an analogy, we're made of pizza dough. Like, that's our nature, is love. And that's in us. And yet, we come up with a set of arbitrary preconditions in order to let ourselves feel it. Well, you know, I'll let you have pizza if you do your homework on time, if you answer all your email, if you lose 5 pounds, if you lose 30 pounds, if you make this much money, if you blah, 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 blah. And I think we're motivating ourselves. I think we've picked up somewhere along the way that it's motivating to deny yourself love, to deny others love, in order to get them to behave in a certain way. Very dear friends of mine, I watched this happen around their wedding, where, you know, her parents, you know, refused to come to the wedding because they, you know, in hopes, I think, well, we don't approve that she would call it off. And when she decided to get married anyways, then they were, well, we won't walk you down the aisle. But, and again, you could see in their minds, that was love. Well, we're trying to do the right thing for our daughter. But in practicality, it was the opposite. And we do that to ourselves. So it's very easy to hear this and go, yeah, here are all the people who aren't loving me unconditionally. I almost guarantee you, you are not loving yourself unconditionally. You are doing the exact same thing to yourself that you can see so easily when other people do it to you or others. You are denying yourself your own love, your own good feeling, your own well-being in some kind of misguided effort to motivate yourself to behave in some kind of way that you've made up. You'd be better off behaving than the way you are now. And so I want to talk a little bit more about it, and I want to talk about it in terms of, well, what is love? Like, what does that mean? And what is self? Like, if we're going to talk about loving yourself, let's talk about what love is and who yourself is. And I'll go to calls later in the show, so there's already people coming in. If you want to get in, the numbers to call are 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And if you call in, they'll get you on hold, and you'll be able to listen to the show while you wait. But in the meantime, I one of my favorite quotes about love is from the 1970s, and it's from Judith Viorst. And she wrote, "The difference between infatuation and love is that infatuation is when you think that he's as sexy as Robert Redford, as smart as Henry Kissinger, as noble as Ralph Nader, as funny as Woody Allen, and as athletic as Jimmy Connors. Love is when you realize that he's as sexy as Woody Allen, as smart as Jimmy Connors, as funny as Ralph Nader, as athletic as Henry Kissinger, and nothing like Robert Redford in any category, but you'll take him anyway." And I, you know, for the kids who don't know who some of these people are, I thought that, you know, I'd try and update the analogy a little bit. So here's what I got. Okay, so infatuation is when you think that he's as sexy as Brad Pitt, as smart as Stephen Hawking, as noble as Nelson Mandela, as funny as Kevin Hart, and as athletic as Usain Bolt. And love is when you realize that he's as sexy as Kevin Hart, as smart as Usain Bolt, as funny as Stephen Hawking, and as athletic as Nelson Mandela, and nothing like Brad Pitt in any category, but you'll take him anyway. Now, take away the other people, right? And what you've got is you. So when people talk about loving yourself, often it's like trying to convince yourself you're freaking amazing, that your personality is the best personality. So in other words, we confuse loving ourselves with narcissism, with seeing ourselves in a totally one-sided way. Well, that's not love. That's infatuation. That's illusion. That's kind of just ugly. You can see it in other people, right? Love is when you realize that, look, on a good day, you know, you might be as sexy as Brad Pitt, and on a bad day, you're as sexy as Stephen Hawking. No offense to Dr. Hawking, but it's okay. Like, on a good day, you're Mother Teresa and Gandhi and the Buddha and Saint Teresa, all rolled into one. And on a bad day, you kind of suck, but that's cool because you're human and that's how we roll. I did a talk once that was titled, you know, we're all effed up and we're all perfect. And that's the essence of the self part of loving yourself, right? Every personality is neurotic and insecure, right? Personalities evolve almost out of our thinking as ways of coping with life. But who you are at core, your essential self is perfect as the day you were born, right? You know, chances are if you've ever been around a baby, you didn't spend a lot of time, you know, complaining about the fact that they couldn't even change their own diaper. Right? You were kind of cool with them being how they were, able to do what they could do, not do what they couldn't yet do. But you could see the perfection. You could see the beauty. You could feel the love that they were, the pizza dough of their soul. And at what age does that stop counting? Right? At what age do we make up that that isn't enough? That who we are is insufficient for love. And I don't know. And my invitation to you is to take a look and kind of see, would it be okay with you to love yourself exactly as you are? And in all honesty, I would expect the first answer that comes up for a lot of us is no. No, I can't love myself till I lose the last 10 pounds. I can't love myself when my finances are in this state. I can't. It's bad to love myself. Loving myself would be bad. Like, that's crazy. Right? Who does better when they're not feeling their own love, their own well-being reflected? Who is it that we think, when is in our lives that we go, I mean, I can tell you, some people have told me, they've said, well, I did really well when I was hating everybody because then I set out to prove them wrong. Well, you may have proved them wrong, but what did you prove? Right? You proved just how far hate can carry one person? Right? There's a thing in the law called fruit of the poisonous tree, where any evidence taken in illegal search is dismissed as evidence because it's the fruit of the poisonous tree. It was illegally obtained, so it's not able to be used in a court of law. Well, whatever we create through hate is fruit of the poisonous tree, right? That's the money that ruins our life instead of makes our life a blessing, right? That's the beautiful people who wind up cheating on us, leaving us, moving on, having affairs, doing, you know, making our lives a living hell instead of being part of the blessing of a family. Right? That's the achievement that makes us a target instead of an example. That's not the life anyone really wants to live. It's just the life that's the best that some people can imagine. Because when you don't feel love, when you don't feel loved, when you don't feel the love that is at your core, whether it's being reflected back at you or not, the world can be a pretty ugly place. So like when Nina, my wife, got pregnant with Oliver, my son, our first baby, I was pretty convinced it was going to be awful. Like I, you know, thought, oh, this is going to cost a fortune and I'm going to have to make sacrifices in my career because I was trying to work as an actor at that point and I was just kind of breaking through, but there's still not a lot of money and I'm going to have to become a plumber. I don't know why I thought that, but that's what I thought. And it's going to be hard and we're not going to sleep and it's going to get on our nerves. And I had this idea of what having a kid would be. And in many ways, I was right. Like, you know, babies vomit and don't sleep. And it does introduce a whole other element into your relationship. But here's the thing that I didn't take into account. The moment Oliver was born and the midwife handed him to me, I fell in love so deeply, so profoundly, so hard, that when I looked out at all the stuff that came with having a kid, I didn't care because it was all fruit of the tree of love. It was all the fruit of the tree of life. And everything tastes beautiful from that tree. So it's not that you can't achieve in life without love. You can achieve like crazy without love. But it's really hard to love life without love. And at the core of that is loving yourself. And I want to, again, I make a distinction. So at the personality level, look, you are who you are. You do what you do your best. And oh, well, you know, you know, but at another level, and you can love yourself for that, right? You can love the fact that you're human just like everybody else. But then there's also the love of self with a capital S. There's loving yourself with a capital S. Loving that divine in you, loving that perfection in you, loving that part of you that isn't you but is you. That is the very essence of you that we might call your soul, that we might call your true nature, your true identity. And that self, I don't even want to say it loves us back, because it is love. As Anita said, and I put on the Facebook page, I understood that at the core, our essence is made of pure love. We are pure love, every single one of us. And I used to describe it that, before I had any understanding of the psychology of it, I remember just feeling sometimes that the way I said it at the time was, sometimes I'm Michael loving God, and sometimes I feel like I'm God loving Michael. Sometimes that self feels outside of me, beyond me, and sometimes I am that self, and I can see Michael in all his foibles and love him anyways. So let's go to the phones. Let's see. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. You can also go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/mneil, and you can post a comment under the show description, and I can respond to you from there. But in the meantime, let's begin in Chambord, Illinois, with Sandia. Sandia, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I am well.
Good. Okay, so I listened to the podcast, and I also read the book, the recent Inner Circle book, which was awesome. Mm-hmm. So one of the things you said with Anita Morjani was, once we realize that we are the self and that there's nothing to fix, and she said something about we need to go through some of these ups and downs and these different experiences, you made a statement that sounded something like, once we know who we are, then it's just a matter of cleaning stuff up so that we see it more clearly. Am I kind of paraphrasing it correctly?
That does not sound out of character with what I might have said, he said evasively.
Okay.
Because I just don't remember. But that sounds true to me.
Okay. So what happens is my small self gets knotted up in that and says, but, you know, then I have to do something about the gunk that needs to be cleaned up. And then I get started in the whole thing, because I remember one of the phrases in the book was, the quickest way to not be in the present moment is to start seeking the present moment. So I get all mixed up. So I'm stuck at that quandary. Like, if it's just about cleaning up the gunk so we can be clearer, then here we go into the doing cycle again, the seeking cycle again.
So what you're up against, and what I'm up against in trying to talk about it, but what anyone is up against in trying to make sense of well-meaning advice about life, is everything is true sometimes. Right? The philosopher Ken Wilber said, nobody is smart enough to be wrong all the time. So depending on where someone is at, cleaning off the gunk might be the perfect metaphor for them, to see that what's inside them, who they are at core, is great, and it's just kind of been covered over. Okay. For somebody else, in a different state of mind, that might sound like, oh my God, I've got to do all this stuff, and I don't know how to do it, and rah, 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 and it takes them in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I describe it in The Space Within is, in a way, there's kind of two things going on simultaneously. So if you think of the stuff that covers over the love that we are as ice on a river.
Uh-huh.
So on the one hand, we can chip away at the ice, right? We can work on ourselves. We can do things. We can kind of look at our thinking, look at our lives, and kind of see what we can see about kind of clearing away the false ideas of self. But the river is flowing underneath the ice all the time, and it is melting the ice from underneath. And the sun is in the sky, and it's melting the ice from above. And so whether or not we chip away at the ice, the ice will clear. And sometimes when we chip away at the ice, it feels like we did it, because we broke through. We had a breakthrough, and we broke through to the water underneath. But ultimately, you know, it's almost, it's a way of proving to yourself that you're really in there, more than a necessary step in being there. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's what occurred to me when you said what you said.
Well, what came to me as you were speaking was a sense of humility and a sense of appreciation. And the only thing that I didn't quite understand was the last piece you said about knowing that you're in there, in the ice, or just in the process.
You know, it's a metaphor, so I don't know.
Right.
But knowing that you're in there kind of works for me. It's like I know, however bad a day I feel like I'm having, however much I feel like I'm struggling, I know that at some point I'm going to wake back up to me. I'm still in there, underneath all the noise of my thinking, underneath all the constriction of my ideas and how I'm feeling when I'm having an off day. I'm going to come back to myself. Like that's what we do.
And that coming back to yourself would be the just, you know, like you said about the plane, let go of the wheel and just cruise for a little bit and let an aid come back up. Or whatever.
Whatever. Like we never really go anywhere. Right? Yeah. The essence of who we are, it's a metaphor to say it's covered over. I mean, it's like that. You know, I sometimes use the analogy of a mirror, right? A mirror is untouched by anything that it reflects. It can reflect, you know, Hitler or Gandhi, and it maintains its perfection. But it can get, you know, blotches on it. It can get fogged up, and then it loses its, it apparently loses its reflective quality. It temporarily loses its reflective quality. It hasn't really lost it. It's just gotten fogged up. It might be reflecting something we don't like, but that's temporary. The nature of the mirror never changes. And the essence of who we are, our true nature, never changes.
It's funny, when I woke up this morning, the first thought that came to my head was, you are just an essence of God reflecting itself through your personality. Like you're the actor in the play, and this is the part for now. Anyway,
well,
thank you.
I was going to say, it sounds like your own wisdom kind of answered your own question, which is kind of fun.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure, Cynthia. Thank you for phoning. You know, this is, you know, that was just a great example. We can overthink anything, us humans, right? It's our jam. Like, it's what we do. You know, what do you do? I overthink life. Oh, cool. Me too. right? And that just manifests in different ways. But when we don't, when we let it go and let thought flow, it kind of slows down to a much more manageable pace. And we get to experience more of the river and be less caught up in whatever happens to be floating on the river at any given time. And that's another way of thinking about, think about loving, like love. People talk about, love is a verb. No, love is a state of mind. No, love is this, love is that. Look, they're all ways of talking about love. They're all legitimate definitions that we can use for the word love. But for me, loving yourself is allowing myself to be in love, in a state of love, even when I'm thinking about myself. Right? Most of us let ourselves be in a state of love when we think about our kids. They're young enough. When we think about our partner, if we're liking them today, when we think about whatever it is we really appreciate in the world, we have no problem being in love, in a state of love with that thing while we're thinking about that thing. But again, I think it's motivational. We seem culturally to just not be cool with being in love, being in a state of love when we're thinking about us. Because we got so much thinking about us. And we don't even exist in that sense. Like, we're made up. That personality that we think should be like this or is like that, or really we're like, I'm really shy, I'm really angry, I'm a Libra, I'm 14, whatever it is. That's an idea of self. There's a story I tell. I actually was on a webinar this morning, for the Three Principles Global Community. And those of you who don't know the Three Principles Global Community, it's one of the largest principles-based organizations in the world that built around an understanding of the principles that I shared in last week's show. You can listen to it on the Hay House Archives or at michaelneal.org on what are the three principles. And they're doing a big conference in a couple weeks here in L.A. If you come, I'm going to be speaking there. It's a great few days, and I really encourage you to come down. Well, on the webinar, we were talking about what's real and what's created. Like, what has an existence outside of what we make up about it? And I use the analogy, as I often do, of gravity, that gravity doesn't work the way it works in a Roadrunner cartoon, where Wile E. Coyote can run off the edge of the cliff and doesn't fall till he looks down. Right? Gravity's always on. Well, love is always on. Right? It's always there. It's a way of describing the feeling of life itself. If you've, Sid Banks described it as pure consciousness, uncontaminated by our personal thinking. Rumi pointed to it when he said, out beyond all ideas of right and wrong, there is a field. I'll meet you there. It's the very energy of life. And we can be in that energy with any kind of thinking. On the webinar, I was talking about a story I tell in the Inside Out Revolution about Sid Banks, that before he had his enlightenment experience, kind of in the run-up to it, he was talking to a psychologist, and they were sharing their complaints about life. And Sid felt he was really, really insecure. And the psychologist said to Sid, "Well, you're not insecure, Sid. You just think you are." And Sid had a little epiphany, and he said to the guy, "Do you know what you just said?" The guy said, "Of course I know what I just said. I'm a psychologist." Rah, rah, rah. But Sid knew that he couldn't really have seen what Sid saw, because Sid realized, the essence of who I am is not insecure. I just think I'm insecure and then make up that that's me. right? I had a similar experience with shyness where for years I thought I was shy. And then one day it just occurred to me. My wife and I were invited to a Grammys party, and I didn't want to go because I'm shy, you know, and I heard myself think this. And a new thought came to mind. And I thought, well, what if I wasn't? Like, what if I'm not shy? I just think I am. And we wound up going to the party and I had a great time. It was just like, oh, you know, what if you're not scared? You just think you are. What if you're not unlovable? You just think you are. And underneath that thinking, you are who you are. And you're as lovable as any creature that's ever walked the face of the earth. Like, what if that were really true? And you may be thinking, well, I can see how that's true for some people, or I really like the idea of that, but it's not true for me because. Well, I promise you, whatever comes after the because is made up. Not that you may not have done what you did or experienced what you experienced. That bit's not made up. But the idea that this makes me unlovable only makes sense in a world where love is a limited commodity that's doled out as a reward and taken away as a punishment. In a world of unconditional love, there's no limit. Like, it's all love all the way down. We're made of that. So in a way, loving yourself is just knowing yourself, because your true self is made of love. But we can look at it practically. We can look at it and go, well, you know, how do I treat the things that I love? Well, I tend to treat them with a kind of a patience and kindness. Not always, you know, I can get short-tempered, but generally speaking, right, I'm pretty nice to my dog. I'm pretty good with my kids. I'm pretty loving with my wife. Right? What if I cut myself the same slack I cut them? Right? I don't know if it's your kids or your partner or somebody else in your life, but I guarantee you there is somebody in your life who could pretty much get away with murder in your eyes, and you would go, oh yeah, but you know, and then you'd come up with the why that didn't make them unlovable. You know, they just, I mean, anybody, they were really pushed, right? You know, I mean, sure, it was bad, but I mean, come on, right? There is somebody in your life, and maybe it is your pet. Like, I remember with me, I remember, gosh, I my best friend and I, we were living in London, and we went up to Bristol in the UK to see this Australian guru named Barry Long. We were in our early 20s, and we wound up not being able to, we didn't have the money for a hotel room, so we spent the night on the streets, and we met all the homeless people, and they were great, and they kind of took care of us for the night. We had just a great time, and we went to the seminar, and I remember Barry Long saying, you know, think of somebody that you love unconditionally, and I could not. And it was kind of worrying to me. It was like I was thinking through, well, my mom, no, I was mad at my mom about this, and well, okay, what about my brother? No, I was really mad about my brother. And I thought, oh my God, I got no one in my life I thought unconditional. And then I thought of my cat, Petey. And I actually asked, this was like the only time I ever spoke up in that seminar. I raised my hand and go, is it okay if the thing that I think of that I love unconditionally is my cat? And everyone laughed, and Barry Long went, yes, that's fine. Now, here's what happened, though. It opened me up to that feeling of unconditional love again. I'd kind of lost touch with the feeling. I'd forgotten what it feels like to love unconditionally. And when I opened myself back up to that feeling, I started feeling that love for everyone. I started feeling that love for my family. I started feeling that love for, I started feeling that love for pretty much everyone in that moment. Because I realized I just had it wrong. I had it as a this thing that people had to meet my criteria in order to have. And yet, I knew I treated my cat really well. Right? So what if you treated yourself as well as you treat your cat? If you love your cat. Like, what if you treated yourself as well as, you know, what if you cared for yourself as well as you care for your pets, as well as you care for your kids? Now, maybe you do. And if you do, then you probably have a reasonably nice life. Right? You probably get to feel love a lot. But if you don't, then you probably are spending an awful lot of time looking for love and good feeling outside of yourself. And even when it looks like you found it, what you really found was you found a place or a person with whom, for the time that you're with them, you're able to not overthink things. Your thoughts go relatively quiet, and you're able to just feel the love that's always there right under the surface, under the ice, in the metaphor that we talked about. We've got a on Facebook. So again, you can go to facebook.com/MNeil and post under the show post. And we've got a post here from Stephanie. This is from my daughter. She doesn't have Facebook, but wanted me to share this with you. Hi, my name is Maggie, and I'm 16 years old with Asperger's, depression, and anxiety. I'm having a difficult time loving myself because I'm constantly hard on myself, and I have no friends, so I think that no one could possibly like me. Today is my ex-boyfriend's birthday, so I'm feeling particularly depressed. Do you have any wisdom for me? Thank you. I love Hay House Radio, and I listen to it every day. So, Stephanie, thank you for posting that for Maggie. Maggie, thank you for asking. See, in a way, you're dead right. You are having a difficult time loving yourself because you're constantly hard on yourself. Like, that part of what you said is right. It's really difficult to love and hate at the same time. Now, some of us feel we can do it, right? We have a love-hate relationship with ourselves and others. But actually, it's still one at a time. Like, you kind of, here's what it's like for me, Maggie. I'm either in my head or I'm in love. I'm in my thinking or I'm in love. And when I'm in my head and in my thinking, and I know with Asperger's and depression and anxiety, you're in your head a lot. But every single time you drop out of your head for a minute, the love's there. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't get less. It doesn't wither. There is as much love there as the day you were born. There is as much love there as the love your mom has for you. There is as much love there as the love you probably felt when your ex-boyfriend was still your boyfriend. It doesn't go anywhere. It's permanent. But we go away. Like, we go up into our head and we get away from it because it doesn't live in our head. Like, that's the one place love isn't. Good ideas can be up there. Bad ideas can be up there. Judgments can be up there. But love is what's waiting for us when we fall out of our heads, when we fall out of our thinking, even for a moment. And you say, today's my ex-boyfriend's birthday, so I'm feeling particularly depressed. Look, I'm sure everyone listening goes, yeah, right? We've all got one of those, you know, ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend, ex-whatever it is. But it's not actually true that you're feeling particularly depressed because it's your ex-boyfriend's birthday. What's true is you're probably thinking about your ex-boyfriend a lot today. And that's why you're feeling particularly depressed, because you're probably thinking some pretty depressing thoughts about him. And here's the good news part, right? When you stop thinking about him, you'll be right back to love. Now, it's not to say you can control it with your mind and you can force yourself to not think about it. None of us can do that really well. But it's right there waiting for you, Maggie. It's not something you've got to do. It's waiting for you to fall into its embrace. And I promise you, when the fever breaks, when whatever thought storm you're caught up in right now passes, you're gonna find yourself in love. And that's all loving yourself really means. is to rest in the love that we are, to rest in the love that's sitting there waiting for us underneath the noise of our own heads. So if you want to get in on the phones, numbers to call 866-254-1579 outside the U.S. 001-760-918-4300. Meanwhile, back on Facebook, we have, let's see what else we got here. We've got, we have Leanne saying, could you invite the Hay House technicians to Creating the Impossible to make Mission Impossible Hay House app work? So, I don't know. I've heard there are various problems with the app. I actually have heard that the latest version of the app is working much better. So I don't know what to say about that, but I will use it as a gentle segue and invitation to talk about Creating the Impossible. So thank you for that, Leanne. Check is in the mail. We have a program. I've been doing it every year since 2009, and I'm actually writing a book about it that Hay House is going to be bringing out in September of next year, and it's called Creating the Impossible. And the idea behind Creating the Impossible is that so much of what we don't have in our lives that we want, we don't have because we don't think we can have it. And because we don't think we can have it, we don't bother doing anything to create it. And because we don't do anything to create it, it rarely comes about. But we think it's proof that, people like me don't have things like that in their lives. People like me can't build successful businesses. People like me can't be self-employed. People like me can't lose weight. People like me can't fill in blank. And the basic game in Creating the Impossible is you choose a project that you figure you've got less than a 20% chance of pulling off in 90 days. So the program proper starts in January. We actually, we send out videos. We get a lot of people already registered. And so we send out videos every week to kind of get you in the right frame of mind and inspire you and motivate you. And there's a package where you can come along on a creativity weekend with me here in LA or virtually. But when the program starts, you go for this project. And so the first rule is you got to think it's pretty impossible, that it's really unlikely to happen in the 90 days of the program. But the second thing is you got to be kind of sufficiently inspired by it that you really want to spend 90 days working on it, whether or not it happens. And when people do that, when people disconnect what they want from what they think they can have, something magical happens. And I say magical, it's not magic. It's just the way things work, but it feels magical. And what it is that as soon as we engage with an authentic want, an authentic desire, a soul goal, something that just speaks to us, that calls to us from the heart, it brings forth our deeper mind. It brings forth the creative intelligence of the mind. And ideas come to us. Opportunities show up in our world that just don't show up when we're trying to create from our heads. Right? You probably know about SMART goals. I've been writing, there's a couple, if you go to caffeinefortheSoul at michaelneal.org and read the last couple of weeks, Inventing the Future, Part 1 and Part 2. You can also, I think, find them on the Facebook page. I've been writing about how one of the main reasons that we don't wind up creating what we want in our lives is because we think we already know how it's going to go. And so since we're so sure that we've predicted the future accurately and what we want is not in our future, what we think we need to do to get what we want is so intolerable to us, too, so unpleasant to us that, we wouldn't possibly want to do that, we wind up just not unleashing the power of the mind, the incredible creative potential of the mind in the direction of what we really want. And so we don't get inspired. We don't get new ideas. So we don't move forward. So we prove ourselves right. You don't want to prove yourself right. Right? It happens with clients all the time. Right? I've been coaching people for 26 years. We have small group coaching programs, we have one-on-one coaching, and in all that coaching, one of the single most common things that gets in people's way is they argue for why their problem is real, why they're stuck, why they're never going to overcome it, why they can't have what they want. You don't want to win that argument. You really don't. You know, like, the best news in the world is that you're usually wrong. Because we live in such a limited sphere of our own potential. We live in this, you know, as I talk about, one of my coaches said to me, you know, we create our lives on a postage stamp of possibility. And when the playing field gets bigger, the game gets a lot more fun. And when the game gets a lot more fun, we engage with it more. And when we're engaged, when we're creatively engaged with any endeavor, we do really well. Right? There's only a few things that kind of need to be present to do well in the world, in any creative endeavor, in creating anything in your life. Right? And one of those things that we need to do is we need to get our head in the game. We need to engage with the game. And the clearer we are about what the game is, the easier it is to engage. And we want to play with as free and clear a mind as we can. We want space in there for anything. We don't want a tight little controlled, I must only think these thoughts place. We want it to be open to possibility, open to imagination, open to miracles. That's the space where miracles happen. With a wide open mind. And it lets us be really present, present to love, but present to opportunity and present to possibility too. And it is amazing what you can create from that place. So if you're interested in creating the impossible, go to creatingtheimpossible.net, or you can go to michaelneal.org and you can click on the Creating the Impossible button and you can sign up for that program. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Austin, Texas, and let's speak with Liz. Liz, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, I hope you can hear me. I'm getting off here at an exit to pull over.
I can hear you just fine.
Read your book, The Inside Out Revolution, and I know a little bit about George Gransky. And I get that, you know, when you're thinking things, you're just thinking whatever you're thinking, and it really doesn't matter. But lately, when I wake up in the middle of the night, sometimes I'm just going around and around and around and around with all this stuff, and I stop myself and I think, okay, this is just what you're thinking right now. These are just your thoughts. It really doesn't mean anything. But then I'm kind of at that place, and I just say, well, okay, now what do I do? You know, I sort of sit there in the dark saying, well, I'm still running around the little rat hole here, going around and around and around, and I'm not sure once I realize that it's just my thinking what I'm supposed to do with it.
Well, okay, let me give you a couple analogies, and you tell me what you hear in them, okay?
Yep.
So if you wake up in the morning and you look outside, and it's a really cloudy day, what do you do?
I just notice it's a cloudy day and do what I normally do.
Right. Now, if you have a really bad dream, and you wake up in the morning, and in the dream, like, I had one recently where I robbed a bank in Romania. I have no idea why. And it was like so vivid that it took me like 5 minutes to realize, okay, I've never been to Romania. This was probably a dream, right?
Okay.
But once you wake up to the fact that it was a dream, what do you do about it?
Well, again, you just shine it and get on with it.
Right. So when you wake up to the fact of thought, when you wake up to, oh man, I got a lot of thinking in my head.
Right, which is what I've been doing.
Right. It's no different than seeing clouds or waking up from a dream. It's just like, oh, okay. There's nothing to be done. It will pass on its own. Now, if it occurs to you, like on a cloudy day, it might occur to you to bring an umbrella if you're going out, right? If you have a bad dream, you know, you might, like I used to, He says sometimes my wife and I got into this terrible habit of watching horror movies at bedtime. And so I would sometimes, like, you know, we'd shut out the lights and I'd be like, you know, wide eyed. And, I would kind of deliberately do something to positive to distract myself for a little while till I kind of settled down. But that was all. You know, so that's the thing. There's a difference between telling yourself, oh, I can see it's just my thinking, and actually seeing it's just your thinking.
Right. Well, that's probably what it is. I'm telling myself, but then 2 minutes later, I'm back to doing it again. So I haven't really, I notice it, but then I go back to it. I notice it, then I go back.
Right. And look, noticing it is the beginning of the ball rolling downhill.
Right. Well, and that's what I keep thinking, is at least that's a step in the right direction, because I didn't get that that was truth until recently. So I think I'm partway there.
Yeah. No, I think you are too. And I think what you'll find is if you keep looking in this direction, it's what I tell people all the time. Look, if you stay in the conversation, you will see more. If you keep looking in this direction, you will see more. And the reason that that is true, the reason I can say that with 100% confidence, is because what I am describing is real. It's gravity. It's that fundamental to how life works. So you don't have to be an amazing person. You don't have to have amazing abilities. You just have to keep looking till you see it. And it's not like, oh, in fairness, it's not like, and then your life will be perfect forevermore. No, when you see it, it's really easy. And when you don't see it, it's just as hard as it is for everybody else.
Right. But your theory is you just see it more and more often as you notice it more and more.
Well, I'm going to even say it's not a theory. Right? If I look in a tree and there's a bird in the tree, there's a really good chance I'm going to see the bird.
Right.
That's, look, it's really, I don't want to say, I think it is difficult for most of us to kind of see that there are some things that are just true, whether you believe them or not. And those are the things that we can build our life on. Because they don't need us to be a certain way to be true. And the nature of thought is one of them. And the nature of self is another.
Well, that helps.
Thanks for phoning, Liz.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. I mean, that's really what we're talking about in essence. This is what I'm saying anyways. I don't know if it's what we're talking about, but it's what I'm talking about. Love is there, whether you know it or not, whether you invoke it or not, whether you allow it or not, whether you're feeling it in this moment or not. Love is what's there when you're not up in your head thinking about everything, when you're not withholding it for a purpose. Unconditional love is our nature. So loving yourself is simply allowing yourself to be in love, in that feeling of love, of aliveness, of who you are, regardless of whether you feel like Usain Bolt or Stephen Hawking or Brad Pitt or Nelson Mandela or Kevin Hart or all the female equivalents or anything, regardless of whether you're having a good day or a bad day, regardless of whether your ex-boyfriend was born today or was never born. It is our nature, and it's right there waiting for us to fall in its embrace, fall into its loving embrace at any moment, at any time, one thought away. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. It is my birthday next week, so I'm not going to be live because I think my wife is sneaking me off somewhere fun. But you can check out more at michaelneal.org. Check out the Caffeine for the Soul podcasts, and I will be back with you with a brand new show in 2 weeks' time. Have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.